All right, we're shooting from the trailer. It's Connect. Congratulations, first of all, amazing news yesterday. .NET open source, on and on and on, incredible news. So right now we're going to be with the friendly faces that I know you've all seen before. We're going to talk about C Sharp, we're going to talk about F Sharp, so we have a new face here. So go ahead and introduce yourselves real quick.
My name is Dustin Campbell. I'm a program manager on C Sharp and VB, specializing in IDE experiences.
My name is Matt Torgerson. I'm a program manager on C Sharp and VB, specializing in the C Sharp language and VB a little bit.
Right on. Great to see you guys again.
My name is Lincoln Atkinson. I'm a developer mostly working on F Sharp on the managed languages team.
Awesome. And so off camera, we have Habib, who unfortunately can't fit into our trailer today.
Hi, everyone.
But he'll be answering the really hard questions, so you'll be popping back on. And you run basically the team.
Exactly. I'm pretty much overhead, so.
Not really. please ask questions. That's why we're doing this. But we also have a demo. But let's first talk a little bit about specifically what was announced yesterday related to your world.
Related to our world, yes. So that was a big deal for us and for the .NET team at large, which we work on the managed languages team, and so Roslyn went open source in April. That was a huge deal, and that was really exciting for us. And our brothers and sisters over in .NET, in the framework and in the runtime, they had an equally, or I would say even bigger day yesterday when .NET went open source on GitHub. So that
nice.
that was huge.
Awesome. Okay. So we have a question, and of course, is .NET native coming to the full .NET framework?
You can Habib, pull Habib
come back
in right away.
Yeah, right. We need you right now.
So Habib, that's a great question.
Gosh,
of course.
It's interesting. Every time we pretty much blog about .NET native on our MSDN blog, this question comes up. And right now, to start with .NET native V1, we've really gone after the store experience, and it's all about scoping and making sure that we land the right experience to begin with. Now, having said that, we are looking at figuring out whether we can bring certain technologies from .NET Native to the full framework, but that it will take some time. And the core reason why we don't want to necessarily shake up the entire full framework is there are hundreds of thousands of applications out there that depend on a full framework, and we certainly really don't want to mess with the compatibility as far as the full framework is concerned. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring .NET Native to the store, actually figure out where the core scenarios are, and then based on that, then figure out which features and experiences we'll bring back to the full framework.
Cool. It'll be good to know at some point also what are the technical reasons for this decision, right?
See, that is why we have him as our leader, right?
Right.
This kind of answer is
just
great.
That
these,
was a wonderful answer.
Yeah. Thank you, Habib. Yeah.
All right, so we have another question. I do want people to know we are demoing. We're going to demo some of the amazing work that Mads and Dustin and the larger team have done. So where can people get those killer t-shirts? You guys wear them all the time.
Mads actually has one on too, right?
Yep. But his looks newer.
Yeah, mine's an original.
I keep mine for special occasions, such as today. You can't actually get them.
No.
You can't?
No. Oh. People who worked on the team got them.
eBay?
I don't even... maybe
people who used to work on the team sell them on eBay?
Yeah, maybe there'll be some rogue...
Right on.
You study hard, you interview at Microsoft, you join the C# team, that's all you need to do.
Right on. So we have another question. Is WCF open source too? WCF.
Habib knows all the details.
So, for clarification, the bits that we open sourced yesterday was what we're calling the .NET Core 5, which includes basically Core CLR, and as far as our refactored BCL libraries, and the ASP.NET 5 framework. As far as WCF is concerned, we are still working through what that looks like in the future, but the stack that's currently open source is, as I said, the .NET Core 5 stack.
Okay, that's great. That was a clarification
you should stay
I was
up
gonna
here.
Ask earlier. We have another one for you.
I see some questions here.
So any guidance on go live licensing for the new framework?
So I take it that by go live, you mean that you want to basically deploy to a production server. And so the bits that we released yesterday are preview only. And as with any preview software, it's not really intended for production software. However, what we do advocate is basically kick the tires, try it on various staging servers. But whenever it's good and ready, so to speak, we'll announce when it's production ready.
Awesome.
So it looks like I would recommend that you just stay up.
Okay,
there
you go.
Because quite honestly,
we play this
here
all
you go,
wrong.
Take this. Look at the next question.
Okay.
So what happened with a desktop application framework like WPF?
If you look at what we did on our blog yesterday, we had a blog entry on the future and roadmap of WPF going forward. Quite honestly, if you look at WPF, it's a mature technology. It's doing extremely well. And then it's very similar to Windows Forms. And in the sense that when you look at the set of features, it's more or less feature complete. However, there are a number of areas around performance, reliability, and stability that we're working through. And if you read our blog that we announced yesterday, we have a roadmap of how we're going to both address the WPF runtime features that are still outstanding, as well as the tooling experience as well.
Cool. Now I'm going to do this live. This is the first time ever live on Channel 9. We're going to clip this on you.
We're spilling all the secrets. This Channel 9 going open.
This is why you can hear people, man. And then we'll go down here.
Those little dots near people's chins, they weren't actually just noise in there.
Exactly.
On the video stream.
Is there a plan to bring .NET native to Linux OS X?
At this point, the answer is no. However, it's something that we're looking at. So as I mentioned, the stack that we've opened sourced yesterday was the cloud/server stack. But a lot of the technologies, especially around the base class libraries, are exactly the same as .NET Native as it is with these server stacks. So I could absolutely see a world where that might happen, but at this point, it's not our plan of record.
Cool. All right, so let's now look at some code.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Show us what you've done.
Right. So from C# and VB,
yes.
We've actually worked on this release for 5 years, so much longer than pretty much anyone else.
That's right.
And the reason is that we have completely rebuilt our compilers in C# and VB, mm-hmm. rather than some other language. And we've done it in such a way that it opens up the compiler. It's really sort of becoming a language engine, if you will, where people other than us, through a public API, can ask questions about source code, its shape and what it means and so on. And then we build our own great IDE experience on top of it.
Awesome.
We're going to show a little of that and a little of some of the new language features we also added.
And this is something that's also, this is in the Visual Studio 2015 preview released yesterday. That's kind of a big piece of news for us as well, is that that's kind of, this is the release where it finally isn't vaporware, right? Yeah. So the Roslyn bits. So
yeah, these are the bits that we released yesterday.
Great.
Yeah. All right. So I assume we're on the demo machine now. So one of the things that we've done, at least in the IDE experience, is really introduce a lot more smarts around static analysis, and we'll do things like fading out code that's not really necessary. So you kind of see at the very top of the IDE, at the very top of the file, you see, using directives fade out because they're just not used in the file. Right, and this is the sort of thing that you're kind of see lighting up throughout the IDE. There's a very refreshed experience here.
So we're going to see throughout that the IDE kind of understands your code better. Yeah. I'm going to add a using clause if I can spell. It actually is going to help me spell there. We're now, as a language feature, you can see that there are static classes in the completion list here as well. We're going to allow you now to add static classes as well as namespaces with the using clause. And what
awesome.
That means is that static members of that static class are now directly in scope. And so you can see that this is grayed out because I'm not making use of it. But if you look at console or rightline down here now, console is faded, meaning that I don't need to use it. And if I click here, you can see sort of part of the new IDE experience. I get a light bulb suggesting me actions to do.
Right. And so the action here is you can simplify this member, right? You don't need to have console.rightline because you have it in scope up there. And so you see that we give you a preview showing you what's going to be removed, what's going to be added, and kind of give you confidence to make to apply these code fixes or refactoring, giving you confidence that it's what shows up in the preview is what's going to show up in your code. This is I like to call these windows into the future because this is kind of it's really showing you what's going to happen. It's pretty cool.
And this is Roslyn underneath, right?
This is a brand new IDE experience, also built from scratch. Mm-hmm. Roslyn project was about building the compilers, but we really built the whole stack again on top of it. So
amazing.
Everything here is brand new. It looks the same in a lot of ways. Things like just the fact that using system up here is colored blue and then black, that was written again, right, on top of Roslyn, on top of new APIs. But if you go ahead and apply that, what's cool is that now you see that this is no longer faded because we're using it, right, in Rightline. Of course, there's a light bulb here as well. So if again, I can see that preview. I can go ahead and see what's going to happen. I can remove all my unnecessary usings, and now our code fits on screen, which is what we were looking for in the first place.
Great.
Yeah. And one thing to mention here is that this, we are not showing in this demo, but this infrastructure of plugging into the light bulb and showing these previews and so on, that's an infrastructure that everyone can plug into relatively easily, use our object model for the code to write their own squiggles if something is wrong, their own code fixes or refactorings and so on. Right. It's pretty straightforward to do.
It's a pretty cool thing. Let's show you another experience. So we introduced a lot of refactorings in this release, but we also refreshed some old ones. As we went back and rebuilt some of these features, we took a hard look at some of them and decided, well, the experience around this is not as good as it could be. One of those is the rename symbol feature in the IDE. We've had it for a decade, and the user experience around it was pretty basic. It was like, bring up a dialog, type a new name, wait for things to happen after pressing OK. And so instead, we introduced an inline rename feature in the IDE so that refreshing this experience. So you start a rename and you just make changes and it changes everywhere in the editor. Okay.
Great.
That's now because this is built on Roslyn and because this could also affect things and other files closed all throughout your solution, we want to make sure that you can use this with confidence. So it's also using Roslyn to detect conflicts under the hood. So if I were to type something, for example, that would conflict, now it's going to show you that up in the top right on the dashboard, yes, there are four unresolvable conflicts here, which kind of tips my hand that also we can resolve those conflicts for you in a lot of cases automatically. So for example, if I type a keyword, it's going to go ahead and escape it and make it right. If I want to do something completely contrived, call it, say, like right line, it'll automatically qualify the one down here at the bottom because, well, now you have an identifier that conflicts, but also notice that now the using's faded up here again because we're no longer using that. So there's a lot of smarts in this feature, and in these experiences, we've taken a lot of time to really build in the detail work to make these as delightful and as robust as possible.
There's a liveness to it, right?
Where,
things happen as you type, not in some batch analysis later. Now, one thing that you might have noticed is that in the argument null exception down here, we didn't actually change the name because a string literal. So we're addressing that at the language level where you now have a name of operator where you can take the name of any identifier in the program and actually have that converted into a string literal. So here I'm taking the name of person and the ID knows that it's the same. I'm referring to that parameter up there. If I were to make a typo here, it's going to complain, and if I inline rename it, it's going to rename everyone. So it's refactoring safe way to refer to program elements.
Great. Well, let me show you write code like that.
Yeah, don't write code.
Write code like that.
This is demo fodder code, right? Let me show you another one. So I mentioned that we did introduce some new refactorings. Two in particular are kind of, I'd say, fundamental or traditional refactorings. They're refactorings that have been they're kind of in the Fowler refactoring book that we haven't had in the product, and we added them into the product. One of those is introduce explaining variable or introduce local. It's kind of one of these things that you use while you're coding. A lot of people use these to just write some code and then let me clean it up as I go. And so again, you see the preview, you see what's going to change, you see what's going to happen. I can introduce a local for that. It puts me right into an inline rename. Again, that detail works so that we can get to a nice experience. Of course, in this case, we already picked a good name for you, right? We didn't call it value or variable or something like that. We just picked it a good name. So I can very easily go through and just very quickly change these. Now, if those expressions appeared elsewhere in my code, I can replace all of them. It does the same conflict resolution. It'll insert casts and parentheses and whatever it needs to keep your code semantically correct. And so those sorts of things are, you're going to find a lot of these in the new IDE.
So one thing that's interesting is a lot of colors, right?
Yep.
And I like your XP theme, by the way. folks want to know, though, and a really serious question is, how do you support people who are colorblind? And it's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
Accessibility, of course,
is an important thing. And so with colorblindness, I mean, there's you have to be careful, right? I mean, certain things are important to try and avoid on the one hand, like, say, red-green colorblind, for example. And so what we end up doing are things like, we end up making things look different, right? So it's not just about the color. So, for example, if I were in an inline rename right here, it's green right now, and you can see that they're highlighted, and you can get a sense that, and you see the dashboard is up. But also, when I go to, and I actually have conflicts, those get outlined, right? Okay. So you try and make things not just look different by color, but you make them look different in kind of the style that they appear.
Cool.
So, we do think about those things. at Microsoft, there's a whole process for making the product accessible and testing that, and Visual Studio goes through some pretty rigorous testing of that.
Awesome. So we'll continue this demo, but we should get, we have another person on stage here who happens to be F-Sharp man, and Tim wants to know, could F-Sharp be used in cross-platform app development with Xamarin?
Yeah, actually, Xamarin Studio has pretty good F-Sharp support today, and they have for a while. F-Sharp support's in the box with Xamarin Studio now. You can create iOS apps, Android apps using F-Sharp. It has a lot of capabilities that, frankly, Visual Studio doesn't have with the F-Sharp language, and that's really cool. F-Sharp has always had a strong sort of dedication to cross-platform support. People are using it on Mono, on Linux and Mac all the time. So yeah, there's a lot of possibilities for doing cross-platform F-Sharp development, and Xamarin's a key partner there.
Cool, great. Tracy wants to know, any plans to port .NET Core to Android or iOS?
Charles, this is one of the beautiful things about going open source. Mm-hmm. While we don't have any plans, we've already heard that some folks actually want to port .NET Core to a Raspberry Pi. So,
nice.
I think it's an awesome question in the community. Folks who do want to port .NET Core to Android and iOS would say,
cool,
go for it. So it's in the hands of the community now.
Great. And I think what's interesting there is that .NET was originally designed to be cross-platform. And so because it runs inside of its own virtual machine, if you will, then, you know, the code's open. Go make it happen.
Absolutely.
Right? Go make it happen. There's a lot of smart people out there. You can do it. Izzy wants to know, with all the automatic instantaneous refactoring, is there anything can cause Roslyn to get into an infinite loop? Are there programming patterns we should avoid?
Bugs could make it go into an infinite loop. It shouldn't. I mean, on compilers and IDEs, we spend a lot of time writing code that breaks out of loops, infinite loops, right? And so if that happens, please file a bug. There should be no programming patterns you should be avoiding or anything like that. This is we've done a lot of work to try and make sure that this works on any kind of code, any sort of code you want to write. So
it's one of the reasons we put out previews is not just to excite people, but also to make sure that as more people pick things up, we catch that kind of error. Actually, Dustin and I found one just this morning.
Yes, we did.
But we're not going to show it.
You're not going to show it. So what about that? That brings up a good point, though. I mean, what about, like, you know, if you happen to be writing an actual application with tons of code and lots of files and lots of things that you guys have to manage?
Absolutely.
So have you, I mean, Roslyn obviously can scale.
Yep.
That's the question. And you have done massive tests to show that, right?
Yeah, we've been dogfooding it for a long time on I think our best story is dogfooding it on Roslyn.sln itself. We just, when we develop Roslyn, we just use the product, right? And we plug in Roslyn into it, and then we use Roslyn as our IDE experience while we're developing. And Roslyn's not a small thing. It's all the C# compiler, VB compiler, the core pieces, all these other things that we have, all of our tests, the IDEs. It's like 70, 80 projects in the solution, and it's just huge, right?
Sure.
So that's our best case right now. It's also a good case of gnarly types of code. You know, in the IDE, there's lots of lambdas, lots of link, you know, lots of more advanced features. We use async everywhere. Mm. And so that's our best story right now. I would say use it, but for us, it has been scaling very well. We also do a lot of performance testing on this sort of thing, on kind of our classic tests, so we know those are in good shape too.
Awesome. So. Right on. So will these refactorings be available to all of the SKUs? You announced the community, which is amazing, the community SKU, which is free. So yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sorry, Habib, I keep looking at you because
that's totally fine.
Right. Ken wants to know, what new APIs are exposed for portable class libraries, cross-platform Xamarin, Win8, Win8.1, blah, blah, blah.
So yesterday, while we didn't really talk about essentially the new surface area as far as Windows is concerned, what I can tell you is we've received a ton of feedback that when it comes to the .NET surface area, it's not enough right now as far as exposing it across the store profiles. Mm-hmm. So what I can tell you is we're working very closely with the Windows team right now to increase the number of APIs that are available to PCL. So I'd say stay tuned for good news in the future.
Great. That's always a good answer. Will the FW run on OS X also, in particular WPF applications?
I take it FW is framework. I'm just going to assume.
It might be a typo of F sharp.
Yeah, let's the pretend w. like it's a typo. Can it's you run F sharp on OS X?
You can run F sharp on OS X. Right on. Always have.
So with WPF applications, the .NET core stack is our essentially our servers slash cloud stack, and we explicitly did not put any UI stack in there. So the answer is no, you cannot run OS X. Okay. WPF on OS X.
And so in terms of WPF, mm-hmm. we had the conversation at Build.
Right.
You know, we asked, was there still a WPF team? Mm-hmm. The answer was yes. Mm-hmm. And we met one of the PMs.
Right.
So what's sort of like the, how's WPF doing as of yesterday? In terms of, was there anything special announced? Is there anything, I mean, I haven't privy to every single announcement. Mm-hmm.
I would say there were two big announcements. The first one was the fact that we have now a clear roadmap of where we're going to take WPF. And we are well aware that, you know, in the last at least couple of years, we really haven't done a good job of communicating what the future of WPF is going forward.
Sure.
The other thing that we did announce is that we now have essentially a number of tooling around WPF, the visual diagnostics being a really good one, because what we've heard over and over again is that it's really hard to debug WPF applications. So now we allow you to essentially do things like inspect the elements live and see what the actual rendering looks like. So
sweet.
I would highly encourage anyone who's interested in the future of WPF mm-hmm. to go to the .NET blog. It's blogs.msdn.com/.NET. And you'll see the entire roadmap of what we're planning to take WPF going forward.
Awesome. All right. So any plans to support the Go language in Visual Studio? That would make VS a killer. That's from John Grant.
I don't know of any plans, but this sounds like a great partner opportunity. Right? I mean, VS is a platform that is extended by many non-Microsoft companies mm-hmm. with different languages. That could certainly be done. We don't have plans to do it. Right
so
now.
That but that brings up a really good question. I mean, sort of the power of the CLI, right? Back in the day, mm-hmm. was I could build languages that target the CLR and .NET and get them into Visual Studio, and there's a whole platform to support that. So, but the question really, that's an interesting question, because how hard is it for me to add a language to Visual Studio? That's the real question.
It's not easy.
Okay.
I mean, as someone who's done that, it's and not even at Microsoft, done it externally for Microsoft, mm-hmm. it's not easy, but it's easier today than it used to be. There are a lot of great examples out there. Python tools for Visual Studio, Visual Studio you can take a look at, you can understand all the kind of, you know, under the hood nitty gritty of plugging in a language to Visual Studio. And there are companies out there doing it really successfully, Cobol.net and some of those that are out there that are doing a lot of cool things in Visual Studio and using that as kind of their IDE with their language.
So. Cool.
But that's a separate question. Now, you sort of bring in the CLI as part of the question.
Yeah.
And that's a separate question of, does a given language fit well on top of the CLI.
Yeah.
So Cobol.net was able to kind of fit on there, but not every language may be able to do that well.
Sure.
So someone would need to sit down and investigate that.
Yeah. Absolutely. But they're kind of orthogonal, right? You can have tooling support in Visual Studio and or, you know, sit on top of the CLI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One interesting thing that might be an option, the F-Sharp project system, the
that's
language
another example.
Service,
yes.
The entire F-Sharp Visual Studio IDE stack.
Yes.
Is open source. So that's we're one of the first languages that's been able to do that. Mm. So if you're looking for an example of a .NET language, plug an individual studio with IntelliSense and project system support, take a look at F-Sharp.
Great, and just look at the sources. Mm-hmm. GitHub,
that's
right?
The best answer.
It's on CodePlex.
CodePlex?
We're looking at GitHub, but right now it's on CodePlex.
Okay, all right, so Peter wants to know, F-Sharp looked like the foster child in yesterday presentations, was not mentioned at all. Will it be supported by Microsoft in the future?
Well, we got 33% representation for managed languages right here. So that's
arguably one of the cooler shirts.
We got the F-Sharp shirt, the C-Sharp shirt. Where's the .NET Foundation shirt
here,
over here?
I've got the. They're all golfing today.
Okay, got it. F-Sharp, we're getting more and more support from Microsoft. We're seeing increased adoption from people mm-hmm. within Microsoft. People are getting more interested. F-Sharp got joined with the rest of managed languages just within the past year or so. And that's been a really great partnership. People like Mads and Dustin are really supportive. Management is supportive. So we're seeing some really good stuff in the future for F-Sharp.
Great.
We'll see it growing.
F-Sharp is our canonical functional programming language
yeah.
that we ship as a first class citizen.
It's been in the box for Visual Studio since VS 2010 mm-hmm. With F-Sharp 2.0, F-Sharp 3.0 and VS 2012. 3.1, we're shipping F-Sharp 4.0 in VS 2015. So it's fully supported, And it's a really great intro to functional programming for .NET developers. You don't have to go learn a whole new platform. You're not learning Haskell or whatever. Mm. It plugs into .NET. You use the same libraries.
Right.
It's a really great story.
Which is interesting, but we don't have to get into that. But Matt's...
Can I just say something
of course.
Else? That F-Sharp is such a front runner in open source and community engagement that the F-Sharp community has contributed a lot, both to F-Sharp, the F-Sharp 3 series, and also now to F-Sharp 4. Mm-hmm. And that community is on fire. That is really the kind of open source engagement that F-Sharp has led the way for, blazed the trail for the rest of us. It's just mm-hmm. amazing. And the rest of us are looking to F-Sharp for like how to do things right.
Great.
When we go open source. It's been amazing. Like, the number of pull requests that F-Sharp gets is just astounding.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome.
We went open source. We were able to accept contributions starting in April, same time as Roslyn. Mm-hmm. That was a really great day for our whole team. And since then, we've received about 160 pull requests for F-Sharp.
Wow.
And we've been able to apply 90 of those up till now. It's really just a matter of
so by
I
apply
have
you mean merge
to bring them in.
Yeah, merge. Yeah. That's merge like 13 requests. More than we
Beautiful.
Talked about last week too, right? So
yeah, exactly.
So that brings up a good point. Don, of course. Hi, Don.
Oh,
Don
great.
Wants people to know like what are some of the heavy hitting F-Sharp 4.0 features?
Yeah. So we just released a blog yesterday and an update package for F-Sharp. It applies on top of the VS 2015 preview. And it's got some great new language features for F-Sharp. Some of the most popular ones are support for using constructors as first-class functions. So in F-Sharp and in functional languages, you're going to be passing around functions as first-class objects, passing them to higher-order functions, which use them in various ways. One gap that we always had there was that you couldn't use a constructor in that way. A constructor, you can think of it as just a function. It takes a couple arguments, and it returns back an instance of some class.
Yep.
So people used to think, why doesn't this work in F-Sharp as a function? Why can't I pass this constructor in to some higher order function? And now you can finally do that. So that's one of the great features. That'll reduce a lot of boilerplate in F-Sharp code. F-Sharp is usually pretty clean, but one place that you used to need a little bit of glue code was little lambda functions to call constructors. That's gone. Another big one is that we simplified the use of mutable variables in F-Sharp. There used to be this sort of arbitrary distinction between heap-based and stack-based mutable variables, and it was kind of hard to guess which one you were going to need. They had different syntaxes. It was sort of a stumbling block for a lot of developers as they got going on the language. It was secretly kind of good because the harder we make mutable state, the less likely anybody's going to use it. So that's not so bad. But we've simplified that, just a single syntax. It just works.
Great, man. Awesome.
Yeah.
So the passing the constructor around is an interesting thing.
Yes. Yeah. It'll make the code a lot cleaner.
So back to our wonderful demo. Someone did ask, by the way, we'll get back to F-Sharp. We're going to go back to C-Sharp now. Someone had asked, can you show us some language features? What are some
sure.
new language features?
Yeah, yeah.
The IDE stuff was cute. Now, what about the language?
We got some more stuff.
Yeah, we can show a few in this demo if you like, actually. So let's look at, so if you look at this method, right now it's not being very null friendly. It's just throwing if there's null passed in, but let's make it null resilient instead, okay?
Yes.
Now you have this problem that if p is null, then p.name would throw an exception, and we don't want that. And then you'd have to test for null first and guard it all. We now have a language feature called the null conditional operator. So you can say p question dot name. And what that means is if p is not null, then get the name. Otherwise, just the whole expression here becomes null. Okay. So we can do the same with p dot age here. And age is an int. And what you see is that if p is null, then this whole thing becomes null. So the result is now a nullable int instead of just an int. If you want to have a default value for when things are null, you can use good old null coalescing operator to say, let's say this is Charles, and
that's
let's say
right.
that the default age here is 21. Do they match up fine?
That perfect. Well, yes, in some ways.
You're certainly legal, right? So so that's the question dot operator. It's a question index operator as well.
So I have a question about the question dot operator.
Okay.
So why would
question?
Would you ever want? Would there ever be a case where you'd want a null reference exception?
Yeah. Sometimes null reference exceptions are typically a sign that you have a programming error, and you want to get that exception to fix your code, right? Mm-hmm. You typically shouldn't want a null reference exception anywhere in working code. Right. But I do want, so let's say that I access the length off of here, and I know that, length is maybe a bad example, but I know that at this point, name is not going to be null. I'm assuming that P always has a name that's not null. Mm-hmm. Well, if that assumption is wrong, then this is going to throw.
Sure.
And by putting a dot instead of another question dot here, I'm asking the compiler to please throw if name was null in this case, because it's not supposed to be.
Got it.
Right. Okay. I just want to show one more feature.
Please.
Another feature that's really cool is string interpolation. Like, stringer format is great, but it's also a little gnarly and error-prone to use because you have these placeholders, 0 and 1 here, and then they have to match up with separate arguments over here. Let's just make that easier and build it into the language. So you can now just have a string literal, and then you can poke holes in it. So if we go to these curlies here and make them special holes, then you can, if you see the 0 now became black. Mm. And that's because what I can put in here is an expression that is then two-stringed and merged into the string, formatted into the string, just as with stringer format. So if I put a name here, and I do another one here where I put age.
Cool.
Look at that IntelliSense then, showing up.
Yeah, look at it's full expression in here. You can put whatever expression you want, pretty much. You can still use the string.format specifiers here. I can say D3 here and still get it formatted the way that that you do. But it's just a much nicer syntax for it. Yeah. So those are some other language features.
Great.
I want to show one last language feature here. You see the class person here itself. Mm-hmm. We define it with getter only auto properties. Previously, auto properties had to be get set. If you wanted an immutable surface area, mm-hmm. you had to write it out the long way with backing fields. And now it's just it just works the right way.
Awesome.
So
very nice.
Is that a nice tour of a few of the good features?
It is. Yeah. It really is. So Sarvana wants to know, will there be something like F-sharp interactive for C-sharp in 2014 or 2015?
It's 2016. The answer right now is no, though it feels like we've been kind of the biggest teases for years with this, because I know we've shown it at Build before, when it wasn't called Build, right? We've shown prototypes of a REPL, read-only, you know, redevelop, print loop, interactive experience a number of times in the past. And it's something that we kind of had to put on hold during development and get stuff done. We had to get the compilers done. It was, and just kind of buckle down and get things into the box. Mm. And so we are picking up our heads and we're looking at it again. We're looking at, you know, hopefully having something out there, you know, maybe in an out-of-band fashion, maybe in an update wave, but something, but probably not in the box for VS 2015 RTM.
Understood.
Yeah, but it's still on our radar. We definitely want to do it.
And of course, somebody could write it themselves.
They could.
Yeah. They could.
It was one of, to be honest, it was one of the motivations for embarking on the Roslyn project in the first place. It's just that you got to get back to the stuff you already have working,
yeah.
and then you can use it to do new stuff. And we're just sort of getting there.
We got to a place where it was priority one was, oh, we should finish the compilers.
Yeah.
That was kind of what happened. So, yeah.
And in the meantime, just use F-sharp interactive.
Yes.
There you go.
That's my advice.
Yeah.
So, all right, we have more questions coming in. So, VB.net. There's VB.net sort of like the WPF of, just kidding. So, VB.net.
I hope you are.
No, sorry. What I mean by that is, look, VB.net is a first class, very important citizen in our, what would we call it, our sort of garden of languages in the IDE.
Mm-hmm.
It's lockstep in sync with C#. So when you guys add a new feature to C#, it gets added to VB.net, right? That's been the case for a long time now.
Where it makes sense, yeah.
So Arlo wants to know, is it going anywhere? Is it going to be here forever?
I can't promise forever. I can't promise forever for C# or even F#. Mm. But our current plan is still that we continue to evolve C# and VB in a relatively close relationship, where we call that co-evolution, right?
Yeah.
Where if we do something big with one language, we want to also do it with the other. Like, why shouldn't we? And Roslyn itself was built very much as a two-language thing.
Mm. Right. The features that Maz just showed in C#, most of those features, if they weren't already in VB, are also being added to VB. Mm-hmm. Question dot is already there. Name of it will be
added, I think, post preview and also string interpolation as right. well.
And Getter only auto props.
And Getter only auto props.
XML literals that come into C sharp?
No.
All right. So, Alex, thank you for the question. But actually, you didn't ask the question. You're asking this question. How long did you plan on open sourcing .NET? How long was this being planned? It's not like you guys figured it out a couple months ago.
No, we didn't. In fact, Charles, I'd say when we announced the .NET Foundation at Build this year, that was kind of our signal to the world that, you know, as far as the .NET ecosystem is concerned, we think that open sourcing and kind of creating this community around .NET is going to be one of the core principles going forward. I have to say, as far as engineering is concerned, it has been quite recently that we've really kind of dug in and tried to understand what it looks like. But the overall intention, I'd say, you know, build to of this year was like the moment, so to speak, where we put our stake in the ground and said that's what we're
cool.
going to do with
.NET. So now, in terms of engineering, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to give away the code of the core CLR, and the garbage collector right. and the JIT and all these sort of advanced technologies that are combined, that are basically written in C mm-hmm. with classes and some modern C++.
In fact, there's potentially some assembly in there as well.
There you go.
Yes.
So did you have to put a concerted effort to make this stuff readable and understandable?
Yeah, in fact, I'd say, Charles, we're still down that journey. We have not kind of been there yet. And it's really challenging because at one end, obviously, you want to make sure that the entire stack is open source and everyone can contribute to it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, when it comes to modifying code that's right on the bottom of the stack, I mean, it takes a special sort of skills and talent to really understand. You need systems thinking. You can't just think of, you know, I'm going to change a bit of code up here.
Yeah.
But we are going through the process right now of what does it actually mean to open source something that's that low level but also usable. And that's the thing. When it comes to libraries, it's a very easy thing to do. I mean, everyone understands kind of how to work with C#, but at a lower level stack, where you really need systems thinking, we're still grappling with exactly how we're going to do that. But we are going to do it.
So. Cool. And there's a lot of people out there that are capable of that, and that could really help with moving it across platform. Mm-hmm.
As I said, when if someone's looking at porting .NET Core 5 to Raspberry Pi, they'll have to figure out how to handle those kind
of things. So enjoy, man.
Yes.
Izzy Hayes wants to know, where did the name Roslyn come from?
Ah, the name Roslyn. So that's a misspelling, R-O-S-A-L-Y-N. And so that might be why it's hard to find out why. It's R-O-S-L-Y-N. And it's a town in eastern Washington, right?
Ah.
That I know, my favorite part of that town when I've visited is the brewery in Roslyn. But it's also where Northern Exposure was filmed. There's a lot of I don't know how apocryphal they are, stories. Like Eric Lippert has blogged about how he named Roslyn and how Peter Goldie was telling me about how he named Roslyn. And so I'm not really sure how we came to it. We actually had a different code name at first, and that code name was not a good one because there was another team that had that code name and they actually got canceled. So we said, let's ditch that code name.
Okay.
And then we went on with, we picked Roslyn, and there's a lot of apocryphal stories. Do you have any memory of that? You were in some of those meetings? But naming things is something at Microsoft that we spend a lot of time doing.
Oh, yeah.
And there were design meetings, whole design meetings, thinking about what should we call ourselves in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, we came up with this little town in eastern Washington.
Great, it's a wonderful story.
That's become almost a Microsoft tradition, is using place names as code names. Things
right.
like Longhorn and Whidbey in the past.
Yeah, Whidbey and Orcas are islands out here, right in the Sound. And those were Visual Studio code names.
So. Totally. Yeah. 2005? Was that Whidbey?
That was Whidbey.
Mm-hmm. I remember
was 2008.
That.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So RAM, because we've open sourced .NET, mm-hmm. are we still really invested in it?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I really do want to clarify is I get this question quite frequently, that does open source mean that Microsoft's not going to support or stand behind .NET anymore? And I want to clarify that just because really open sourcing .NET means that our source code now lives somewhere else. But when it comes to the customer promise of supporting and providing SLAs and so forth, we're going to continue to stand behind .NET as is, because ultimately it's a commercial product. That in fact there are tens and tens of very large assets at Microsoft right now, Exchange and so forth, that completely rely on running on .NET. So our promise around .NET and supporting it and so forth is not going to change one iota because we are sourcing. As I said, Charles, it's just the source that's living somewhere else.
Understood. So when somebody forks .NET,
mm-hmm.
And it's, that fork starts to be is actually used in production. Let's say some Enterprise X uses a forked version because it implements something they needed. In fact, they're the ones who implemented it, for mm-hmm. example. Another enterprise comes along and goes, yeah, we like that.
Right.
What do we do?
As part of the open source license right now, it's based on MIT mm-hmm. with a patent covenant, meaning that basically as far as our customers are concerned, they're protected. And also what we do is we don't just willy-nilly essentially accept every pull
sure.
request. I mean, we have engineers that basically, as well as working with our lawyers team, that sit down and figure out what's the pedigree of this source code and how's it going to impact both Microsoft and our ecosystem. So we take that extremely seriously, Charles, and it's not just a cowboy.
Absolutely. Of course not. Yeah. Totally understood. Let's see. Peter wants to know, what is the future of WinRT, the Windows runtime, not Windows RT that mm-hmm. runs on the Surface 2? Does anybody here know that?
I mean, there might be some confusion there. The .NET Native,
exactly.
Windows WinRT is a platform with APIs, and .NET Native isn't replacing that. It still calls into WinRT effectively. If you're building a Windows Store or Windows Phone app, it's still calling into that platform. It doesn't replace it.
Exactly. Right? In fact, think of it as, Charles, we're replacing one engine with another engine. So right now, instead of essentially a WinRT application running on the full framework, mm-hmm. it's going to now run on the .NET Native
runtime. Perfect. You can think of it as being like, this is how a C++ WinRT app runs.
Right.
Exactly. Like and that. It does. Well, mm-hmm. yes.
Yes.
So, hey, thank you very much. We have to end. We could keep on going for like an hour more. It's too bad we don't have more time, but... Thank you for tuning in for the great questions, and thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for having
Cheers.
Us.
Of course.
It.